Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. I'm Lance Kenmore. We're here every Saturday morning talking about what's going on in real estate. As always, I'd like to thank the radio station and, of course, our co-host, Mr. John McKay, for working to make this happen. John, how are you doing this week?
Well, the kids have been out for spring break and the house is still in one piece.
Well, that's a good sign. And that is a rough week. The kids asked me, you know, they'd ask me in the morning if I was still going to work again today. And I laughed and said, yeah, we don't really have the spring break that you have. I did hear, though, I think on one of your sister stations earlier this week, one of the DJs said that 3 out of 4 adults would still like to have a spring break like they had in college.
What I don't understand is who's the 1 in 4 doesn't want a spring break?
I did not think of that. Mr. Tom Coyne, our in-house lending specialist there, looking at the other side of the coin. So, yeah, it was a great week, though. We definitely, the kids enjoyed staying up a little bit later, and I saw a bunch of them running around town. So I'm glad to know everybody's house still survived over there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we always like to start off, and kind of that spring break is a meter for us of the spring market. And it's been a strange year here in the Tri-Cities because our spring market really started January 1. I mean, it has been kind of nonstop since then. But that spring break really becomes kind of a turning point for when we start to see even another level of ticked up action in the market. So it's going to be really interesting to see, with people out looking, with the weather getting better, exactly where we're going to be at in this market. And there is still lots of multiple offers going on. I know the last two shows we've talked about the speed of the market, multiple offers, what's happening with multiple offers, and some of the issues that are coming up from that. I'm going to touch on that a little bit after our celebrity segment and then get into today's topic, which is home inspections, because we've had a lot of changes and a lot of things coming up with home inspections recently. But today's celebrity house is, and this is a fantastic one, this is Sinatra's home that he had in L.A. in the 50s and 60s, and rumored to be the hookup home for Marilyn Monroe and President Kennedy.
Interesting.
And so this was the current owner of the home. This home was designed by, and it was built by William Piera. And he designed Washington, D.C.'s Kennedy Center and also the San Francisco Transamerica Pyramid. Hmm. So some really iconic big buildings, and then did this residential home. And he didn't do very many residential homes. So lots and lots of history behind this house. And it is currently for sale for $7.5 million. And so, but it is on 4 acres. It is a 4-bedroom, 7-bath house, and originally started last year with a price of $12 million. So it's funny, we see a lot of these homes where they're trying to get that artistic value money out of it, and they don't always. It has to be pretty crazy for that to happen. But this is also a home that not only had that history with Marilyn Monroe and John F. Kennedy, but has been used for a lot of filming recently. So you had Beyonce and Jamie Foxx's characters in the film Dreamgirls. They filmed here. You had Usher's Burn video that was done there. It's been in Mad Men. And then most recently, it was done with DirecTV's commercials where the good Rod Lowe was in this house. So you might have seen those commercials. And so I just imagine the inside of this house with all the pictures of, you know, of the history of what it was used in and done. So there is some value there, but not $12 million as you would see. Now, speaking of value, one thing that I always like to put out there is what's happening currently in the market and what consumers need to know about. And so we have this hot spring market. And in real estate, that kind of presents a little bit of problems on the financing and appraisal side. So before we get into home inspections, I just wanted to real quick, I always like to take what's happening in the market, what are the issues we're looking at real time and what's going on. So we've talked a lot about these multiple offers and what's happening. Well, what's happening a lot of times, say you have you're looking for a, for instance, we just had one. You're looking for a three-bedroom, two-bath Rambler in South Richland under $220,000. What I just described is going to be very difficult to find in that area of town right now with lower inventory for that price point. So you go out and you list a house, you look at all the comparables, and I say, okay, gosh, a three-bedroom, two-bath Rambler with this square footage, the highest anyone has sold for in the last 6 months is $207,000. So that is the absolute max that, that based upon these comparables, is $207,000. So we put it on the market for, say, $207,000, and we sell it for, we get four offers in 24 hours, bids up a little bit, we sell it for $215,000 because of that bidding war and what happened. Now, what happens when this goes to the bank, say the winning bid is getting a loan on the property and they're doing a 5% down conventional mortgage. The appraiser goes out, the appraiser pulls up the comparable properties, and that's what appraisers really give their most weight to, is sold properties. They pull out the comparable properties and they look around and they say, well, geez, no house like this in the last 4 months has ever sold for more than $207,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm concerned now that this house is actually only worth $207,000.
Mm.
So now you have an offer that was at $215,000. You've got a bank appraiser saying that it's only worth $207,000. But in the marketplace, those sold comparables have not inched up enough for him to be able to find data to prove the $207,000. Now, that's not the only factor. They're looking at the multiple offer situations they're looking at. But when you're trying to explain this to an underwriter or somebody out of town, and Tom can speak to this a little bit, is that what they're looking at is they're like, hey, there's no data to show that that house is worth any more than the $207,000. So you're kind of in this quandary where you have a market pushing prices up, and so pressure on the prices up, but you have controls from appraisers and banks saying, whoa, whoa, I'm not sure if we can do this yet. And so there's deals that get stuck in between that, and it's difficult to work through and overcome.
Well, it is definitely an interesting market right now because houses are selling for list price or over list price because that you get into these multiple offer situations. And I could talk all day on appraisals. I really could. But the thing is what frustrates me the most is when I see an appraisal come in at $2,000 under. And when I look at what someone's paying for a house, there's a lot of implied value there because the house is worth what someone's willing to pay for it. And when we see an appraisal come in, you know, $2,000 low or whatever it is, close like that, it really comes back to how is the appraiser this good to say that this house is worth $207,000 and not $209,000, for example.
It's very close. And so from our end, that is definitely hard. And we've had appraisers on the show before, and we've talked to their perspective, and I also get that, too, making those adjustments on their end and with those mathematical formulas. There's not a really good category at the end of that report that says, thank you for appraising this home. Now, please make your artistic adjustment at the end. You know, they are scrutinized heavily now in this market, you know, and in their lending, where that scrutiny was not as big, I would say, 4 years ago.
Well, it even got even worse here recently that there's a system we have to run all appraisals through, and it has like 90 different components that is put into it, and it's graded, I think, like 1 to 4, 4 being, 3 and 4 being outside normal standards, and this is brand new, and we're having reports that are coming back as failing, but still, because the system is so new, we're looking at these reports and still funding these deals, even though according to these guidelines that are now being rolled out, these loans wouldn't be closing when these things go live in August. So it's hard to see how that will impact it, but it's probably going to get even worse before it gets better. But like you were talking about, you know, when appraisal comes in a couple $1,000s low, a lot of it is objective on the appraisal's opinion. Like, let's say he's saying inferior area, so there's an adjustment for $2,000, but that's his opinion on this area versus, say, the comparable. So it is tough sometimes, and it's just it's a part of the business we work in.
It is. And so that's one thing that we are definitely working overtime on right now. this quick documentation of the process that led to that price, the process that we used to get those comparable houses, why the home was priced where it was, and why we made our offer where it was. Having all of that very well documented so you can provide that information to the appraisers, give them as much information as possible to help them make a better choice in those situations. So that's just one of those things. We always like to report on kind of our local stories with what's happening and what we're seeing. And so we're really working overtime on those issues to make sure our clients get the best deal possible and get close to where they need to be in the homes that they want. And that's really the end result of what we're trying to get after.
Do you think we'll see some appreciation in home values?
I absolutely do, because this pressure right now is what leads to that happening. And so I think this year we're going to see, you know, depending upon what happens with interest rates September, October, but these are the type of markets that lead to those appreciation, those home appreciation values, usually higher than normal. Because it takes this type of environment, as much as it's hard for us to operate in and some of those challenges, that's the environment that it takes to now to get those prices to slowly creep up. I mean, we do some of these appraisals. We get that closed price higher. We get a cash sale where they don't have, they don't have a loan to worry about, so they don't have an appraisal issue. So maybe they come in with extra cash, make up that difference, and now we have a closed comparable at 215 in the scenario I gave. So that now bumped that style of house with those comparables up to that 215 mark. So we're kind of in that cycle right now where I do believe, based upon current market data, that we're going to see some appreciation that we, a lot of times in the Tri-Cities, don't normally get to see. So that's nice for our homeowners out there. And a good opportunity for people still wanting to jump into the market while the rates are low, in my opinion. So today's topic, one of the biggest things that happens is in the home selling process, I always love taking things that happen during the course of the week, bringing those ideas to the show for a show topic. So one of the things that happened this week was we had an offer in one of these multiple offer positions that we were at, and they waived the home inspection. They waived the home inspection, which we don't see very often in this market, because we haven't had a lot of these multiple offer situations. And I wanted to go over what that home inspection was and what the power of that was to the seller who was trying to decide between multiple offers, and what that meant for the buyers in that situation. So our form that you attach to your sales agreement is called what's called a Form 35. And so it's an inspection addendum to the purchase and sale agreement. The very first line of it spells out exactly what it is, and then there's a lot of detail that supports it. But it is inspection contingency. This agreement is conditioned on buyer's subjective satisfaction with inspections of the property and improvements on the property. That's it. I mean, that is the basis, their subjective satisfaction. So it can be an overall feeling about the property after the home inspection. It could come down to the color of the walls, even though they saw them when they were there. More than likely, though, what they're looking for, though, is major issues that's going on with the home. It says buyer's inspections may include, at the buyer's option, structural, mechanical, general condition of the improvements, compliance with building and zoning codes, an inspection of the property for hazardous materials, a pest inspection, and a soil stability inspection. The inspection must be performed by buyer or a person licensed under Chapter 18.280 RCW. Now, that is a change that is very different in what has gone on in the home inspection world in the last couple of years. Two is that in the last couple of years, we'd have somebody, they'd write a purchase and sale agreement, and they would say, Uncle Jed used to build homes 30 years ago, and he's going to come over and do my home inspection. And so then there was a lot of discrepancy there, and that was frustrating to home sellers, frustrating to agents, and sometimes because it's subjective already. We're giving the buyer full control there. but then you don't know who's inspecting the house and what their level of expertise is. So they went ahead and made that change that the person had to be a licensed home inspector or licensed in the field that they're inspecting, whether that be the roof or the HVAC or the plumbing. Or the buyer could do it themselves. Mm-hmm. So that still gave the buyer that control, but they had to have that inspection go that. And there was a safety issue, too, for the sellers, because who's looking at my stuff? Are they going to do my stuff more harm? You know, are they inspecting the HVAC system and they undo the screw that lets all the coolant fly out of it? There's these types of issues that come up, and so we want to make sure that that person is licensed and knows what they're doing.
So I got a question for you. Let's say, because I have clients sometimes, they say, no, I'm going to do my own home inspection. When you have the clients and they do the walkthrough of the house themselves these days, can they still go back to the seller and request items get fixed?
Yes, they can, because they've done that themselves. Now, we highly recommend completely against it. In fact, if you say that to one of my agents, we pull out a magic waiver out of the drawer that says, that is wonderful here, but it is completely against our advice.
Yeah.
Just because we have seen so many things happen, and a lot of times it's hard, like the saying goes, you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've seen it, so there's a reason why I'm scared about it, because I've seen it. Now, you haven't. I mean, your thought is, what could be wrong, right? I know if the house is sideways or leaning or,
yeah.
You know, well, let me tell you, there's a lot that could be wrong. We've gone into beautiful homes that were 4 years built, and we found termites before. I mean, 4 years old, you know, sometimes even newer. And you couldn't tell that by just your general look-through, walk-through.
You know, Lance, I remember, I keep going back to this one story. I had these first-time home buyers, and you know, they're coming up with a down payment. And they're paying their closing costs. They're going to pay for an appraisal. So they're thinking, geez, I'm spending all this money. Let's just not get an inspection. And I'm saying, you have to get an inspection. You know, it's $300, but look at the peace of mind you get with it. They went out there, and there was $20,000 in foundation damage.
Yeah.
They called and said, Tom, thank you so much. We're not going to buy that house. We're going to keep working.
Right. That's I mean, can you imagine what would have happened?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, those are those types of situations that we're dealing with and working through. And it does give, now there is a time period there. So the next paragraph that we come that's really important is, this inspection contingency shall conclusively be deemed waived unless within, and then there's a negotiable time period. It autofills in our forms at 10 days. People go anywhere from 5 to 15. So unless you give notice within 15 days of mutual acceptance of this agreement, then either disapproving the inspection items, then you waive the contingency automatically. So when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about what happens when items get found on the inspection, how that process looks afterwards. Is that deal dead? Do we negotiate? What happens? So we're going to go through some of the things the home inspectors are looking for, how those items get negotiated, and then talk to Tom a little bit about what's going on in the lending world.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been talking about local conditions in the Tri-Cities real estate market. We've been going over some home inspection items, how that inspection works. A lot of the tools and stuff the home inspectors have nowadays have really brought things up to another level. I mean, we've got home inspectors out there that now use drones to look at roofing areas they can't get to. They use infrared heat cameras to look at heat signatures coming out of heat vents, to look at electrical panels to see what those ratings are. They use cameras that can go in the sewer pipes to check out what's going on in the pipes. So the level of technology and what you can find out, I got to give it to our local home inspectors. They have really upped the game in the Tri-Cities the last 4 years to a whole nother level, and it is really good for the consumer and the buyer to deal with those issues and what's going on. Before I get into more about home inspections, Tom, I know you have been crazy, crazy busy pre-qualifying, putting loans through for us over there. What's going on in the lending world right now?
You know, sometimes, well, we always try to get our topics to somewhat match, and then sometimes we just can't do it. And I was thinking about, what do I talk about today? And I've been seeing a lot of investment property purchases. And so the investors are out there in the market. They're wanting to get in on these low rates, because with low rates, it means they can cash flow, or maybe they could even go with a shorter loan term and still cash flow based on what they can rent the property out at. So I thought, you know what, let's take a refresher on investment properties and talk about that today. So investment properties are looked at completely differently by lenders than an owner-occupied property. Primarily, it's because lenders look at them as more risk than owner-occupied. If a family was going under hard times, and maybe the husband lost their job, or the wife did, and they're having to decide, which one of these mortgage payments do we make? Do we make the one that our family lives in and our children, or do we make the rental house payment? And they're going to make the house that they live in. And so, you know, back in 2008, 2009, when we were seeing all these foreclosures coming through the market, a lot of them were investment properties. People were using the rents they were getting on their investments to make their payment on their owner-occupied. So that series of time there had increased the down payment requirements of these investment properties. So now we're still doing them, and I don't want people to think that it's impossible to get an investment loan. It is tougher. Mainly it's because of the capital investment you got to make to get an investment property loan. But there's actually ways that we're even making it easier. So, for example, a lot of lenders will only finance four properties for somebody at a time. And we'll go up to 10 on one of our products. Another one of our products has no limit. You can have as many investment properties as you want. We'll keep those in-house under our portfolio. But I really think that real estate is one of the safest and surest ways to build long-term wealth. And I want to give this example of this client that I have here. It's been 6 months or so. But Lance, he was working out the area, and he said, you know what, I just don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to work. And he wasn't even of retirement age, but he pulled $150,000 out of his 401k. And he used that to buy as many investment properties as he could. Now, each one of these investment properties that he was buying was paying him, I want to say it was $500 a month in profit. That's what he was cash flowing. And so when I sat down and did the math on what's this $150,000 making him based on the cash flow he's getting on this on these investment properties that he purchased and we financed for him, it was 18%.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's an incredible return on money. And we've seen it in the rental market, and it just seems to keep ticking up. And so when I think about it, it's like, could that 18% go down and he rents them for less? Sure. But it's likely just going to keep increasing. And if I got 18% on my 401k, I'm thrilled. So that's one idea of a way to come up with a down payment. Now, on a one-unit investment property, so it's a single-family home, we're going to require 15% down. Now, interest rates are generally about 3/8 to 0.5% higher than owner-occupied property. But when you put 20% down, you get an even lower rate. I always recommend try to get to 20% down, because you're also going to avoid mortgage insurance. But rates get even better at 25% down. A lot of times, if people can count 20% down, they can find a way to get to 25. So if you're buying an investment property, try to get to at least 20%, and if you can, 25% will even get you better financing. Now, we'll finance 1 to 4 unit homes with residential financing. Anything over 4 units, and it's going to take it to a commercial, it starts looking like an apartment complex. So keep that in mind. You're going to have completely different guidelines. Most commercial loans are ARMs. A lot of times you'll have to show your financials periodically to be able to keep that loan, or else they call that note due. So completely different ballgame. Now, let's say you're buying a duplex or a fourplex, and you plan to live in one of the units. We're going to call that an owner-occupied home, which is nice, because we have a program you can get in with just 3.5% down on, say, a fourplex that you're going to live in one of the units. So that's an option. Now, let's say you already own investment properties, and you're thinking, is there a way I can increase my cash flow? And a lot of people are coming in, and they're wanting to just run a quote real quick. Tom, can you save me any money on my interest rate by refinancing my investment property? The maximum loan-to-value for a refinance on investment property is 75%. So that's already going to put you in that lowest tier of investment property rates, which is nice. But maybe you're in a situation where you can go from your old 30-year loan at above 5% or whatever it is, and go to a 15-year loan. And now you just cut 10 years off your mortgage, because 5 years has already gone by. You're still cash flowing, but now you're paying the thing off 10 years faster. I mean, you could multiply your payment by 10 years, and that's a pretty drastic amount of savings. So if you're in one of those situations, you want to look at it, you know, feel free to give me a call. If you thought about, you know, how do I get into rentals, or is it the right fit for me? give myself, give Lance a call. We both have investment properties. We'd be happy to educate on what we do to make it work for us. And we can talk money and see how we can get you an investment property loan.
Tom, thanks for that information. That's great. And you did that exact same scenario for me about a year ago, year and a half ago with two of mine. And, you know, moved to a 15-year note. And, I mean, we're just cranking away. Like, I love getting that statement because on those smaller notes, like the 15, I mean, your principal and stuff is just cranking away, going down.
I look at it when every time I get that statement, I look at it and I'm like, oh, my tenant just gave me $500 in their savings account.
Yeah, and so that really helps with that principal. So fantastic information, great information today on what's out there. I do want to get in some new property that we just listed this last week. There are some fantastic deals. Obviously, the first one I talked to you about that I said had four offers on, that one's not available anymore. just saying. So, but I've got a couple other fantastic ones. 909 South Gum Street in Kennewick. This is a three-bedroom, two-bath home on just under a half an acre, 1,920 square feet. It's got an open layout, large living room, huge kitchen. You've got tons of cabinets, breakfast bar island open to the dining room and family room. You've got a real master suite with the private bathroom, dual sink vanity, large shower, French doors off the family room. All of this is coming in with a detached shop for $135,000. Hmm. I mean, this is another one of those where, I mean, I would have to, if someone calls me after the show, I'm going to have to check my email because there could be offers on this coming right away. So 909 South Gum Street, getting in there for $135,000 with all of that is just a fantastic, fantastic property. Pick number two, this is a great, great property. 3521 West Warnett Road in Pasco. This is a five-bedroom, three-bath home in West Pasco. It's got a 30 by 24 shop, and it's on an acre, 3,900 square feet. The kitchen has been modernized. You've got the tile backsplash, tons of cabinets, stainless steel appliances. You've got a great master suite with this. You've got a bonus room that would make a great office or a possible six-bedroom if you did a little bit of work. You've got hardwood floors, big bedrooms, and a huge patio overlooking that one-acre yard. We're coming in on this property at $299,900.
Hmm.
Under 300, almost 4,000 square feet, a shop, and 1 acre. I mean, that is just really, really hard to find. Pick number three, talk about move-in ready. This is 5503 Coolidge Court, and this is a five-bedroom, three-bath home on a cul-de-sac, so you don't get any of the traffic that comes through there. West Pasco, 2,463 square feet. You've got a huge entryway that comes right into a large living room. The kitchen is another just big, big kitchen. You've got breakfast bar, tons of cabinets, tile floors that go right into the dining area. The kitchen is also open to the living room. And then right off of it, you have a slider to a huge covered patio, so tons of entertaining. You've got a loft-style family room in the upper level, huge master bedroom with a private bathroom. So you get all of this. They've done a fully fenced backyard and, I mean, professional-style landscaping, gorgeous landscaping. And that house is just a couple years old, and we're coming in at $229,900. So 2,463 square feet, beautiful, beautiful home, and that's 5503 Coolidge Court in West Pasco. So if you're interested in looking at any of those this weekend, feel free to give me a call, 727-8977. You can go to our website, thekenmoreteam.com, and you can get virtual tours and check out those listings online. But like I said, fantastic, fantastic market with what's going on there. Before the break, we talked a little bit about the inspection contingencies and what goes on there. From a seller standpoint, the worst is the worst response you can get from that inspection contingency is, and the buyer has some options, right? Because we said it's subjective satisfaction. The worst response you can get is buyer's inspection of the property is disapproved and the agreement is terminated. It's non-negotiable. It's subjective satisfaction to the buyer. One of their options is, we don't like the property, we're not buying it. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to give you a reason. I mean, that's subjective satisfaction. Yes, it's courtesy. So I start on the extremes and say, okay, that is the worst. Because now we don't even know, you know, what was going on. Were they just using that as a way to get out of the deal and get their earnest money back? You know, I mean, there's things that can be going on in the background that we just don't know about. Generally what happens is we get those inspection responses back from buyers, and we take a look at the inspection report, and let's say we're sitting down with one of our buyers, and we say, okay, the roof has a leak, so there's water coming into the attic. That could be something we might want to fix. There's electricity flying out of one of the outlets when you plug something into it. You know, so we're looking at these like life safety issues of these things. So we'll sit down and we'll say, okay, here's the things we did not know about the property. And a lot of times, unless the seller has done some sort of pre-inspection and stuff, a lot of times we find the seller didn't know about these items either. You know, these are things they didn't know what was going on. So we'll take a look at that and say, okay, yeah, gosh, thanks for letting us, you know, we'll say, so buyer requests that the seller repair the roof, fix the outlet that has the electricity issues, and maybe there's debris in the crawl space that they want removed. So we'll send over that, you know, option, and then it becomes the seller's option to look at those items, and the seller's not obligated to repair those items, but the seller then can look at those items and say, yes, I agree with this. No, I want my own experts to look at it and do a little research. Or no, yeah, thanks for bringing it to our attention, but we're not going to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
If the seller does not agree to those repairs, then the buyer has the option of still terminating the agreement and backing out, or presenting some other sort of option that can happen. Sometimes what happens is we get a report back and say maybe like a couple window seals have, the seals are blown in the window. We find out that the carpet, you know, isn't as nice as we thought. There's some holes in the carpet underneath. Stuff that maybe doesn't affect the overall value or structural or life safety issues in the property, but could be an issue. So the buyer could say, hey, I want these three things fixed. The seller has the point at that option of saying, you know what, I don't really have the time to fix those, and I'm not really interested, but I do see your point. So instead of fixing those, I'll tell you what, we'll just reduce the price by $2,000. Or we'll give you an additional $2,000 towards your closing cost to, so you have some extra cash available to handle those items. So there's some negotiation that can go on there with credits to deal with those issues. If they're not maybe structural or life safety, we don't want to ever put anybody in the position where they could get hurt. I think sellers generally understand that if it's a real big safety issue, generally our sellers almost on all cases are the first ones before there's even any negotiation to run out and get that fixed. I mean, especially if they're still living there, they don't want that problem to happen or something to happen to the house. So we get a lot of that back and forth that goes on with the home inspectors. It's also important to note that there is a built-in, if it's and it's a negotiable item, generally from 3 to 5 days, there's a built-in additional inspection time period for experts. So what happened is you have a home inspector that is looking at the general health of the home. That home inspector comes across a heat pump system that they're not familiar with. Maybe it's a well water-based heat pump or new state-of-the-art radiant floor heat. And the home inspector says, I don't see any active leaks, but I'm concerned because it's not heating exactly the way I think. You're going to need a heating and air expert to look at this. What that does is that triggers a time period within our addendum that says, okay, buyer, you can now, you have 3 additional days, or you have 5 additional days. You can go out and get another, now an expert, a heating and air expert, to come look at that and give you your opinion before responding. So our home inspectors are really good, and a lot of times they have great referrals there in the area of knowing what they know and knowing what they don't know is sometimes more important, so they can get an expert out to look at those items. So we're always kind of going through that dance with our buyers and with our sellers to say, here's the issues that we're dealing with, and then once we know what we have, how are we going to address it? So a lot of times we tell people it's really great that we got an offer, but it'll also be really, really great when we're through the home inspection period, because there is a renegotiation period that's going to happen based upon that. So back to the beginning of the show where we talked about a seller having this contingency in place, or maybe in a multiple offer situation, maybe a buyer waives this contingency, the seller has a lot of peace of mind to know they don't have to deal with any of that. If you get an offer that does not have an inspection contingency in it, and once again,
asterisk, asterisk, I am not advocating that. I'm just telling you what we've seen in the local market recently is we've seen some people waiving these inspections. We saw it twice last week, and I probably haven't seen that twice in the previous 12 months. And we're doing a high, high volume of transactions. So it creeps into the marketplace, and hey, let's talk about it on the radio show.
Yeah.
And so one of those, things that happens is the seller looks at that and says, whoa, well, you're saying I sign up here and I'm done, and they bring the money to closing? It's not exactly that easy, but it takes a huge, huge variable out of the equation. So something to consider for both our sellers and our buyers. I could probably talk for 2 hours about this, but then we would mess up John McKay's schedule with what's going on. But very fun topic. Love to talk about it. Love to help our buyers and sellers get through that process. We're going to be busy selling a lot of real estate out there. I do want to say Happy Easter tomorrow to everybody. Enjoy the grass greened up early this year for all of us. Enjoy your Easter egg hunts tomorrow. And, Tom, thanks for the information about the lending. Real quick, how can people get a hold of you, Tom?
Go to my website, TomCoynHomeLoans.com or 783-7300.
And we'll be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.